Ernest, we're going to talk about cars, and particularly the car you've been driving this week. I believe the Honda Elevate 1.5 Elegance CVT. And my producer tells me the CVT stands for Constant Velocity Transmission Gearbox. What was it like?
Correct. And noises, that's one of the things this car actually does make. I should have segued into this, to be honest, and left Jerome out of this. But when it comes to the CVT gearbox, I would love at the start of the show just to mention to the listeners out there who has experience with a CVT gearbox and what do they think about it? Because I think that certain cars, specifically Hondas, do the CVT gearbox really well. Their CR-V, HR-V lineup of cars has a very, very good CVT gearbox that I do quite like. And just to clue you up on what a CVT gearbox is, it works with belts instead of gears.
Okay.
So what happens is it's got a sliding belt that sort of changes gears for you, and then it simulates an automatic gearbox. But effectively, it's like a bicycle chain, but instead of it being a chain, it's like a belt. So it kind of slides from one gear to the next. And it then allows for good fuel consumption, apparently, and a smoother drive. But I do think Honda, unfortunately, missed the mark on the Elegance, and I love the way you say that, on the Elegance CVT, because this engine, it just doesn't suit the gearbox. And I think engine is it's not powerful enough for the gearbox. It's 89 kilowatt engine. So the CVT gearbox struggles a little bit, and that also caused the Elevate to have a little bit more fuel consumption on my drive around. Now, I do think maybe once the car gets a little bit more mileage on it, this one's only got 2,500 Ks, it might be a bit more fuel economical, but I was a little bit disappointed. There is another car in that range, though, which is the same engine, but it's the Comfort. Now, what they've done is they've got two, the Comfort and the Elegance, and the Comfort has got less spec, but it's got the manual gearbox. And I think out of the two, the 1.5 Comfort is the one to get because it's also priced quite competitively at 369,000. And then you get, yes, less features, but the manual gearbox for me just makes more sense in that car.
Okay, apart from the gearbox issues, was it a comfortable drive?
Yes, and that's the thing. This is what's so disappointing about this car is because I drove the car on the launch, but I didn't really notice the gearbox being that much of an issue or the fuel consumption because we drive it for one day or half a day. But now having spent a week with it, I noticed that that's a problem. But the rest of the car, it's very spacious. It's got a class-leading boot. It's actually got one of the biggest boots in its class. And this is in a class where it's very competitive with, for example, the Suzuki's and the Toyota Urban Cruiser and Kia's and all these other compact SUVs all play in the same space as the Elevate. And it's got them beat in most of the areas. Some of the spec is better. The interior is plush. It drives relatively well. It's got an interesting bonnet line. You know, the older cars, you could actually see the bonnet and you could kind of judge where the front of the car is. Yeah. Modern cars, you can't do that. And on the Elevate, it's got these bulges so that you can see where the edge of the bonnet is, making it easy to maneuver. It's got a decent camera. The air conditioning works well. As I said, the interior is quite nice. So backseat space is actually very decent. I did notice the legroom is a little bit smaller than I would have liked, but other than that, it's actually very spacious and it's a good car overall. So this is why I think the manual would be the one to go test drive. But if you're stuck on the CVT and you want an auto gearbox, I usually recommend auto. This one goes for $429,900, but it has given Honda another good car in their lineup. Because that's what they're doing now. They're replacing some of the cars that people have been saying, you know what, this isn't the Honda we've come to know and love. And now they've replaced the WRV, which wasn't everybody's favorite, with this, the Elevate.
Thank you so much for the comprehensive input there. And I wonder if anybody listening is driving one of the models already that Ernest has mentioned and wants to give your thoughts, your feedback on whether you agree with his assessment of the vehicle. You're very welcome to send a voice note or WhatsApp to 072-567-1567. The Honda Elevate, the vehicle under discussion there. Now, from a new car to some very old ones, Ernest, and some very special ones that are going to be on the road in our part of the world tomorrow, because they've already been on the road for a couple of days now. The Cape 1000 touring rally is underway.
Oh, it's such a wonderful thing, this Cape 1000. If you're a car enthusiast and you want to see older cars, modern sports cars, supercars, all in a collective, the Cape 1000 is really where it's at. That started on Sunday in the waterfront, and I was there for the sign up and the ceremony, so to speak, where we saw some very interesting cars. And I'm going to list off a couple of my favorite cars that I saw there. Number one has to be, I think it was a 58. It could be a 59. I wouldn't mind if someone corrected me on this. It was a, looked like a 58 Corvette, which if anybody watched the movie Two Lies, you'd know which one I'm talking about. It's usually red. It's got the white slats on the side, a white mark on the side. The exhausts come out the back bumper. And it's just, to me, probably one of the coolest cars of the 50s. And for someone like myself that didn't like older cars when I was growing up, this car stood out of the classics. So there was a 50s Corvette. There were a bunch of Porsches there. They were quite special. In fact, there was one gentleman that flew all the way from Germany in his own plane that took him days to get here. And he's in driving in the Cape 1000 as well. Then, of course, there's the usual raft of Ferraris and Lamborghinis and all sorts of special modern cars. But the Cape 1000 is now... I've been running for a couple of years. I think, understand under correction, this is the third running. And it's really become a mark on the calendar for enthusiasts. It's certainly something that I hope to do one day, where we drive the best roads in South Africa over 5 days and end it off at the racetrack to go as fast as you want. So it really is a nice mix of people being able to enjoy their cars on the road, on the track, and also a good networking exercise for those of us that are into cars, expensive or otherwise.
Now, for those of us who just want to come and ogle them, they are back in Cape Town tomorrow morning. Is that correct? Tomorrow afternoon, they should get back.
They will be at the waterfront tomorrow afternoon. And that's what they do all the time. They end the rally off at the waterfront. Usually, last year, what happened was they first went to, here's a little pro tip, they first went to... Hilani, and then came to the waterfront. I'm checking the event details now to make sure that they do go there. But yeah, they've done a couple of passes already, and then they end off after Chapman's Peak. They go straight to the waterfront. So you can catch them tomorrow at 3 o'clock at the Silo Precinct in the waterfront. That's not the same place they started. So if you were at behind the Table Bay Hotel, it's not there. It's at the Silo Precinct at 3 o'clock tomorrow, where all the cars will be there. And another thing is that if you want to chat to the owners, do so. They love talking about their cars. So now's your chance to really get up close and personal with your favorite sports and performance car.
Thanks so much for the tip-off. Okay, 3 o'clock tomorrow, the end of the Cape 1000 at the Silo Precinct in the waterfront. So if you've got a yen to go and look at the cars and talk to the owners and ask questions about them and maybe stick your head under the hood, you're very, very welcome to do so. You're looking for the Cape 1000. If you want to Google more information about the rally, just simply search for the Cape 1000. All right, for that, we will open the lines to listener questions on 072-567-1567. If you are in the market for a new car, if you are toying between two different models and want some advice, if you're starting to think about a new purchase and are wanting advice on what's available in the category, you are welcome to ask a question. In the meantime, though, Ernest, let's go to the question that came in last week that you said you wanted to research a little bit. Somebody asked about the Opel Jam 1.1 Turbo. They have found one that they rather like the look of and are thinking of buying and wanted a little bit more insight into the vehicle. What can you tell them?
So I spoke to a friend of mine, Michaelin, who had one of these and was driving around with it, a big Opel fan himself. And I was hoping to get some honest feedback from him, which I did. And he told me he enjoyed the car. Opel, unfortunately, have had a bit of a tumultuous couple of years in and out of South Africa, but things have settled down now. So you can get spares for these cars, according to my sources. And the 1.0T, by all accounts, has got a good reliability rating. It's got, it's very stylish. The reviews when it came out were exceptionally good. And now, because of Opel's past, these are the kind of cars where you can really get a good deal on it. You get a lot more car than you would because people are going to go, oh, I'm not so sure about this Opel thing. Maybe I'll get something that's a bit more familiar, like a Clio, Fiesta, or Polo. So those prices stay up, but the Opel's prices go down. So there's no reliability or known reliability issues with these cars. And Opel also, during this time, got very good reliability surveys worldwide. So in my opinion, I think it's a bit of a bargain at the moment. It's something that you can snap up, but know that you might have difficulty selling it because there's not a big market for these cars. But it's still quite a quirky, cheeky-looking car that still looks modern, even by today's standards. So I do think it's a good buy if it's what you want. And by the sound of things, it sounds like that's what this person does.
It sounds like it's sort of caught a corner of its heart, their heart already. So thank you very much for the feedback there. And the person who sent that, I hope it helps solidify your decision either way. I think we can squeeze in one last question, which comes from Melanie, who says, I'm looking for a Jimny type vehicle, but I'm not keen on Suzuki. I want something that I can cart my dog and my bike around, particularly to get us the beach easily. What would you recommend? What are the competitors to the Jimny?
So the Jimny's biggest competitor in South Africa, I think, and it's a little bit underestimated, is the Duster. The Duster, when asked by Juliet Maguire during lockdown, what would be the car that I'd want to be stuck with during the apocalypse, I said the Renault Duster, because it's easy to fix, it's very cheeky, and it's also got four-wheel drive. So there are four-wheel drive models available, and it's very, very good. In South Africa, the Jimny doesn't have that many rivals here, surprisingly. Mm. Overseas, you've got a bunch of rivals for the Jimny. The old Fiat Panda could be considered a rival. You'd be hard-pressed to find one of those. But the Renault Duster 1.5 DCI four-wheel drive is, my mind, the next best option. And it's not as stylish as the Suzuki. But if you're trying to go in the opposite direction, then style is not necessarily your main concern. It does look good. It drives very well. That 1.5 liter engine is stupendously economical. You could drive almost 1,000 Ks on a tank on some of those diesel Dusters, and it's diesel. So I think the 1.5 DCI, if I'm not mistaken, it was only available in manual. I'm not sure if there's an auto available, but I think that's a small price to pay. Very capable car. I've taken it off-road myself. It's got 80 kilowatts and 260 newton meters, four-wheel drive, and 5.2 liters per 100 are the claimed figures, which is very good. So for me, if you're not going Suzuki Jimny, go Duster.
Thank you so much, Ernest, as always, for the advice you share with our listeners and for allowing us to live vicariously through your driving experiences every week. I hope you'll have something exciting in the week ahead that you can share with us next week, Wednesday.
Oh, yes. Lots of revving, loud engines banging off the rev limiter, but not in public places. I'll tell you more about that next
week. Not in public places, for the record. Ernest Page, always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much for your time. Changecars.co.za is where you'll find him, and he will be back with us next week, Wednesday. So just a reminder that if you have a motoring question, particularly one where you'd like some research done, if you are wanting an in-depth comparison of two cars, for example, you are very welcome to send an email in the middle of the week to me on pippah@capetalk.co.za. I can pop it through to Ernest to research for you and give you feedback on air next week, Wednesday.